evening, my friends. Good evening and welcome. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen. Very excited to have you with us here tonight. As always, it is Thursday, June 7th, 2007, 11 p.m. here in the Central Time Zone. I'm glad you're with us. Of course, those listening on AM and FM frequencies across the country and across the world, welcome to you. Welcome to all of you listening online at republicbroadcasting.org, the only officially sanctioned website of the network. Our phone number, as you know, is 800-313-9443. Toll-free and worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. And I got a message today that we were still on shortwave last night. I don't know. Maybe we are today as well. But if you are out there, welcome. I hope you're enjoying the show while you have it. It is probably not going to be there forever, but you never know. Miracles do happen, and we always count on those sorts of things, that's for sure. All right, so here, obviously, I'm on the phone at the moment. We're trying to we're having some compatibility issues, honestly, but I'm sure we'll get that all worked out. And then it'll sound like it's a normal show, hopefully a good thing for all of you out there who like to listen. Our guests will be joining us in about an hour. Until then, we've got some important news. Now, you may have been paying attention to what's going on in the world. Maybe you have not. I have a series of stories that appear to kind of dance all over the place, but I think it comes to an interesting conclusion, so we're not going to waste any time. Let's start with this first one from the New York Times, May 31st. It says, the man infected with a dangerous and hard-to-treat form of tuberculosis who potentially exposed several hundred airline passengers to the disease is the son-in-law of a microbiologist who studies tuberculosis at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. Now, I have to ask you this. If, let's say that I have a Drano Shine or something like that, some ridiculous product, right? And let's say that all the neighborhood dogs come down with poisoning from this poison. Now, would you look at that and say, well, this is just obviously a coincidence? No, odds are that's enough evidence to have an issue come up. Well, this is exactly what happened. Now, you maybe heard about this. This man is named Andrew Speaker, 31-year-old personal injury lawyer from Georgia, and he was escorted from Atlanta by federal marshals to a hospital in Denver that specializes in tuberculosis. So basically, the guy was out there. He flew to Europe with his fiancée to get married, and they traveled all over the country. And anyway, there's a whole lot of shenanigans going into this, but we'll get into that. The thing that's noteworthy, I think, about this is the guy's now father-in-law, okay, his bride's father, is an expert, a microbiologist who studies tuberculosis, strangely enough, at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention there in Atlanta. And if supposedly this is just supposed to be a great coincidence. It's bizarre to me. Again, maybe the conspiracy theorist in me is coming out, but I find this to be a little too coincidental for my taste. And again, some people believe in coincidence. I do not personally. Maybe you do, in which case, you're fine with this. It says the CDC said in a statement this afternoon that Mr. Speaker's father-in-law, Dr. Bob Cooksey, works for the CDC and in its division of tuberculosis elimination, where he studies the spread of TB and other bacteria. Dr. Gwen Hewitt, who is treating Mr. Spector at the National Jewish Medical and Research Center in Denver, said at a news conference this afternoon that Mr. Speaker had been placed in a negative pressure room to inhibit the spread of germs while he undergoes diagnostic tests and antibiotic therapy. Dr. Hewitt would not comment on whether Dr. Cooksey's work would be connected to his son-in-law's illness, but she said that after examining his history, it seemed possible Mr. Speaker may have caught the disease overseas. So, again, coincidence? Maybe. We'll have to wait and see. Stay with us, folks. We have to pause here for a brief just a regular commercial break. How about that? Only 3 minutes, and then we're back with more on this story and more news, more Frankly Speaking Radio. Please stay with us.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Frankly Speaking Radio, and obviously I'm off the phone. Hooray. Very excited about that. Getting back to this strange story, the doctor, one of the ones who is treating Andrew Speaker in Denver, is saying that she didn't see necessarily any connection. She's not commenting on the bizarre coincidence that the guy's new father-in-law just happens to be a tuberculosis expert. I don't know. It just seems to me that if this were any other situation, any other incident sort of thing, it would be potentially a lawsuit, some sort of criminal investigation. But in this case, they're saying, oh, well, we don't know how he got it. Well, it is what it is. Mr. Speaker said he was advised not to travel, but was not specifically forbidden to do so. Dr. Hewitt said Mr. Speaker's tuberculosis was discovered after he suffered an injury to his ribs and went to a hospital. After an X-ray examination, doctors noticed an abnormality in Mr. Speaker's lungs and referred him for further testing, which eventually revealed he had tuberculosis, although he had no noticeable symptoms. Officials of the Federal Center for Disease Control said they had contacted Mr. Speaker while he was on vacation in Italy after they learned he had carried the dangerous strain of the disease and advised him to turn himself in to Italian health authorities. Instead, he made his way to Prague, flew from there to Montreal, then drove across the border into New York to avoid being stranded outside the country by his name appearing on a United States no-fly list. Once in New York City, he was persuaded to go to a hospital and has been cooperating with federal health authorities since then. Now, again, this took place on the 31st, so about a week ago. You probably have heard something about this. I know I've been hearing about it, and you have as well. Anyway, I
was going to bring it up regardless because I think it's an important story, but I noticed a lot of connectivity as far as other things go. So basically the guy was, and here's the whole situation in a nutshell. They told him he had TB. He was contagious, but not highly contagious. He says that they told him that it wasn't a big deal, that the doctors who spoke with him face-to-face weren't even wearing a mask. They said it's extra drug-resistant tuberculosis, like super mega bad, very, very hard to get rid of. They might have to actually surgically remove the infected portion of his lungs. Now, obviously, in addition to that, the guy's father-in-law, okay, is an expert in tuberculosis, a microbiologist, obviously one of the ones who hasn't been assassinated yet. So he's dealing with this whole situation. Presumably, he knows what's going on, but you know, he's okay with his daughter being married to this guy, going on a honeymoon, okay, and having the whole wedding ceremony. Presumably, he's okay. Anyway, he's fine with her being around him. So that's weird, too. Now, again, I don't know that he actually went to the wedding. I don't know that anybody's dug that up. So he may have been, you know, disapproving of this whole thing, in which case his role in the whole situation needs to be examined a little bit further. You know, this is not maybe comparable to the situation of poisoning somebody. Oh, I don't like this this guy my daughter's dating, so maybe we'll just go after him. And again, I'm completely speculating here. I'm just saying it should be examined. Any other situation, if somebody, again, let's say somebody died of mercury poisoning or somebody got sick from mercury poisoning and somebody in the family who maybe, and I don't know that this is the case, disapproved of the marriage, happened to be a mercury broker, just have a lot of mercury hanging around. Wouldn't you sort of make the connection? But again, you can't really determine how he got infected. The point of fact here is that he did. So he flew to like Paris and then went to Greece. And then had their marriage, and then they went somewhere else, and then they went somewhere else. And then, of course, they were in Italy, and there was a situation where they said, hey, you have to turn yourself in. And he said, hey, come get me. And they said, hey, charter your own plane. And he said, hey, I don't have $150,000, so you better send somebody to get me. And they said, no. So he basically flew to Prague, and then they flew to Montreal, and then he got a car and then crossed the border. And he was on the no-fly list. He was actually on the list not to be allowed back into the country. He was supposed to be detained there at the border. The Border Patrol person looked at him and said, the guy looks fine to me. I'm going to go ahead and overrule this and let him through. They let him through, and he checked himself into the hospital because he didn't want to be stranded in some other country dealing with their style of medicine, which I understand. I do understand that. So the big brouhaha here is quite simply the fact that just due to a Border Patrol guy, probably doing what he's legally allowed to do in some capacity of dealing with this whole thing, he just allowed the guy into the country. So conceivably, if he was infectious, which it appears that he is not really all that contagious, because again, it's his wife, right? And they went and they got married and they were on honeymoon. People do things on honeymoons that you'd think would pass along some sort of viral infection if that was the case, and it didn't happen. She's fine. They have a daughter. The daughter's fine. Everybody on the planes who's been tested and all the different flights he took, they all seem to be fine as well. So what's the deal? Well, this thing has blown up, and it's gotten very big, and politicians are starting to mix up in this, and I think that there's a pattern here. So allow me, if you would, to indulge you in this pattern of news stories, and then we'll go from there. This one I found on the 4th, threatswatch.org. It says, the debate continues over the likelihood of an outbreak of bird flu, otherwise known as pandemic flu, or simply H5N1 variant. There were two important related developments this past week. The U.S. has established new protocols for interagency fights against pandemics. Basically, this discusses the need for the resources of both the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Defense to be pooled and mobilized to fight an outbreak of bird flu. Included in these resource pooling would also be the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of State, the CDC, the World Health Organization, FEMA, and others. President Bush's 2005 National Strategy for Pandemic Influenza is provided here in this story, so you can go ahead and click there. If you have not read that, it's worth a read. That's a lot of agencies. DHS, DOD, Department of Health and Human Services, Department of State, CDC, WHO, FEMA, and more. Okay? So that's the whole new protocol. Interagency fight against pandemic. Now, that's one of the things that came up in the congressional hearings about this TB patient, is that there was too much lag time with him getting back into the country and them not being able to intercept him and prevent the whole thing. So he wasn't infectious, not a big deal. But this is a powerful dry run, is it not? I think so. Perhaps a drill? Who knows? The author writes, back in April, I posted pandemic flu potential for U.S. economic recession, in which the potentially strong negative effects of an outbreak of pandemic flu would have on the U.S. economy. Economy's already in trouble. Now, remember, we're having some economic difficulties in 2001, and they were all subsequently blamed on the 2001 terrorist attacks at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and you know, all that. Now, granted, those took place in September, obviously. That's quite a bit of a ways into 2001. How do you account for the 9 months prior to that? Well, you really don't have an excuse. But when looking back on it, everyone will say, oh, yeah, the recession in 2001 was caused by the terrorist attack. Not so. Well, we're in a situation now where we have to have something to pin this on. Now, obviously, terrorism is a very real situation, a very real threat. But I've always been telling you to pay close attention to the health angle. Anyway, story goes on. In reviewing the report, a number of issues are raised. Clearly, the debate continues over whether H5N1 will actually make the jump to humans, especially since bird flu was first discovered in 1961 and human cases did not occur until 97. Clearly, what is different today than in 1918 when the last pandemic occurred is globalization in general, as just demonstrated by the traveling TB patient. Air travel is such that a virus can be spread from one part of the globe to another almost instantly. That is very, very important. This is another point made by the National Defense University report, was that a medical response to an outbreak of pandemic flu will be late, since the morphing of the virus itself makes it difficult to develop a vaccine for an unknown virus. So anyway, what this goes in to say, it talks about planning, preparedness, and different things like that. And this comes also right around the time of hurricane season. And again, the Pentagon abrupt climate change scenario outlines 2007 as a very, very significant time. So what does all this mean? Well, let me continue. If you don't mind, indulge me with this. This one came out, well, it says the 8th, and that's because it came out of India, the Economic Times, but it's about us and it's about today. A fragile bipartisan compromise that would legalize millions of unlawful immigrants suffered a setback on Thursday when it failed a test vote in the Senate, leaving its prospects uncertain. So the test vote did happen, as we speculated last night. It did not pass. As we had said, that's a big issue as well. It says, still the measure, a top priority for President Bush that's under attack from the right and left, got a reprieve when Majority Leader Harry Reid said he would give it more time before yanking the bill, moving on to other matters, saying, quote, we need to complete this marathon, end quote. So it's kind of still in limbo, is the gist of it. His decision sets the stage for yet another procedural vote later Thursday that will measure lawmakers' appetite for a so-called grand bargain between liberals and conservatives on immigration. By a vote of 33 to 63, the Senate fell far short of the 60 votes that would have been needed to limit debate on the immigration measure and put it on a path to passage. Republicans, even those who helped craft the measure, are expected to support it, banded together to oppose that move, while a majority of Democrats backed it. So anyway, it goes on and on and on. The big issue, it says, proponents of both parties were scrambling to find a way of reversing a blow their compromise sustained earlier Thursday when the Senate voted to phase out the bill's temporary worker program after 5 years. The 49-48 vote just after midnight on making the temporary worker program itself temporary came 2 weeks after the Senate, also by a one-vote margin, rejected an amendment by Senator Byron Dorgan to eliminate it entirely from the bill. The North Dakota Democrats, as immigrants, take many jobs Americans could fill. Very, very interesting. And that goes on and on and on. So this thing is not dead yet. However, it's not really moving forward yet. Now, why is that? Now, again, we speculate on this. Are they going to facilitate this? Anger really infuriate the American people all over the planet, but certainly the ones who this is a neighborhood issue, right, to the point where there's violence, to the point where there's an influx, a massive influx of illegal immigrants by way of course, tapping into those concentration camps that they've been building for the last few years. Or postpone the whole thing and deal with something else maybe in a more immediate sense. Anyway, we'll tie all this together when we come back. Stay with us, folks. Back in three.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, Documents, plural, .com.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making your purchase.
Welcome back. Glad you're here, folks. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. So here's what we've covered so far if you've missed out. The TB patient, of course, him smuggling himself across the border. The whole pandemic flu might cause an economic collapse. And the immigration bill faltering there and failing on their test vote, which took place later, earlier today, I guess you would say. All right, this one came out today as well from the AP. Quote, someone needs to get fired around here, end quote, says one of the hundreds of passport seekers in the line snaking all the way around the Kluczynski Federal Building at Dearborn and Jackson in downtown Chicago. The line stretches around three sides of the building along the interior lobby wall, doubles back with another 200 waiting on the second floor. These are people waiting in line at one building to get passports. One lady even said her congressman's intercession did not speed up the process. Now the Bush administration says it may suspend a post-9/11 security initiative that requires citizens to obtain a passport if traveling to Canada or Mexico. Back at the federal building, the line of people were leaving within 2 days and hadn't yet received their passport due to the deluge of applications inspired by the Western Travel Initiative, now requires passports instead of driver's licenses to return from Canada, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Those without passports will have to undergo extra border screening before they're let back in the country. A proposal under consideration would temporarily waive a requirement that U.S. passports be used for air travel to and from Canada and Mexico, provided the traveler can prove he or she has applied for a passport, officials said Thursday. The U.S. Passport Office has acknowledged delays and said that it has hired extra staffers to field the application overload. This year, they're expected to process 14 million applications as opposed to the 7 million handled in 2002. So in 5 years, it has doubled. Probably. It's not quite doubled, but it's gone up significantly just in the last year when all this thing really kicked off, I guess about a year. Just this year. I think it's this year. The suspension would give the State Department time to deal with a surge in applications that have overwhelmed its processing center since the new rules took effect earlier this year. The backlog has caused 3-month delays in issuing passports and ruined or delayed the travel plans of untold thousands of Americans. How happy are people about that? The demand is such that the State Department has warned applicants to allow as long as 12 weeks for their passports to be issued and up to 3 weeks for expedited processing at an extra fee. Previously, the maximum wait was 6 weeks and 2 weeks, respectively. Almost all of those in line will get their passports after a line stand between an hour and 5 hours, but all say the passport system needs to be fixed, not in Chicago, but in Washington, which has not been ramped up sufficiently to meet demands created by new federal rules. People are unhappy about what? The whole border crossing issue. Again, another connection here, perhaps. The problem, if you look at the immigration bill, now remember, they've said, hey, we got to get this thing fixed, but we can just go ahead and pass it through, force it through, and then fix it later. It's not going to work, okay? It's not going to work at all. And there are problems. They're talking about databases and all sorts of different things. What we're seeing is the massive inconvenience placed on people in order to facilitate the demand for a sort of microchip driver's license, national ID card, and watch that to happen. When you've got this kind of a problem with passports, this kind of hassle at the borders, and you add in anywhere from 12 to 25 or more illegal immigrants with a temporary worker status and all the different shenanigans that go on there, it's going to have to be a computer chip to tie into these databases, as well as, of course, how that will affect the workplace. And that affects all of us everywhere in this country. Wherever you work, whoever your employer is going to be required to have you fill out a form that they can submit to federal authorities that will log you into this database. And every time you go to apply for a job, you will have to be matched up in that database in order to be allowed to work. It just goes on and on and on. So they're not ready for all this stuff yet. Okay, now what else is going on? Well, the economic factor, which is one of the reasons why they're trying to streamline and facilitate this immigration bill, fast-track this through for businesses. We talked about that. This one from May 31st, ZNews.com. The U.S. economy slowed to a 0.6% growth pace in the first quarter of 2007, the weakest in over 4 years, said the government Thursday in a revision for the January through March period. But even though the world's largest economy appeared to sputter, many analysts said the report reflected the low point for the year, and there are already signs of a rebound. Many economists said details of the report validate the view of the Federal Reserve that growth would pick up over the course of 2007. Real estate remained the main drag on economic growth, but the decline was a bit less than earlier estimated. So they're saying, yay, yes, this is terrible news, but this is as bad as it's going to get for the whole year. Well, if you believe that, we've got issues. This one came out on June 1st, Reuters has it. The Canadian dollar topped 94 U.S. cents for the first time in nearly 30 years on Friday as comments attributed to Canada's prime minister added to what has become a big wave of momentum for the Canadian currency. Said Jack Spitz, director of foreign exchange at the National Bank, quote, momentum is clearly in the favor of Canada, end quote. Earlier, the CIBC World Market said the Canadian dollar will reach parity with the U.S. dollar by the end of 2007, given the expectations for higher domestic interest rates and solid economic growth. Really? Parity? So we're talking about basically that it'll be a dollar-for-dollar exchange rate for between the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar by the end of 2007. Now, in order to create a North American Union, folks, you have to have a fairly comparable exchange rate when you try to introduce a new currency that is usable by all countries involved, which would be, of course, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. You see where I'm going with this, perhaps? Stay with us back in three with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. by doing nothing more than you're doing right now because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Glad you're here, my friends. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio, and I am your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome back. So we were just talking about the Canadian dollar. They're expecting it to be on an even keel with the U.S. dollar by the end of 2007. Now, again, I went to Yahoo Finance and looked at the currency converter just to kind of pay attention to what's going on. $1 is worth about 94 cents Canadian. That's what it has in that one. And then... this is all from Monday, by the way. I'm sure it maybe has changed since then. As far as the peso, $1 is equivalent to 10.75 pesos. And just to put it in perspective, the dollar to the euro is worth about 74 cents. So there you have that. So it's a very interesting change. And as I mentioned, in order to form this North American Union, you have to have some sort of usable currency that everybody can have an exchange rate with. So as far as the Canadian dollar and the American dollar, if they can, you know, maybe get those on an even field here of playing field, it's very possible that that would make it much easier. Now, how they can get the peso to increase in value is beyond me, but it's possible that, you know, they'll just have to deal with it. I don't know. But I think all of this ties together in a number of different levels. But what we're seeing is a lot of talk about control and potentially locking down people and borders and the economy. Now, all that ties in with a great many things. A couple of different scenarios by which all of this could come about is some sort of health crisis. Okay, we've talked about that a number of different times on a number of different levels. You've got the CDC SARS preparedness plan, which talks about these conditions being, you know, more or less implemented for SARS or SARS-like illnesses. SARS, of course, is severe acute respiratory syndrome, which means, in essence, that anything that's respiratory in nature would fit into the same category. Okay, so that's flu, bird flu, tuberculosis, anything along those lines. Now, that calls for forced quarantines. Okay, it calls for a great many other things, including potentially if somebody does not go with a voluntary quarantine, actually be locked up. Now, in addition to this TB patient, which is now, he is now, you know, has gone willingly, I guess, with federal marshals to Denver to be treated for his tuberculosis, his extra drug resistant version. There's also a guy in Arizona who's been kept in a prison hospital ward, I believe it is, for quite a while now. He's an American citizen, but he grew up in Russia and presumably acquired his drug-resistant tuberculosis there and came back in order to get treatment. And I think he was homeless for a while. Anyway, he just wasn't wearing his mask. He wasn't staying with the health protocols, and he was basically incarcerated there. So when they keep talking about how this guy's the first one to be quarantined since, like, the 60s, I don't know that that's actually true. So we'll have to wait and see how all this pans out. But it's very, very significant when you start looking into all the connections with all these things. So back to this particular case. This one came out yesterday from the AP. It says the globe-trotting tuberculosis patient moved up his flight to Europe after health officials urged him to stay put, but the Atlanta lawyer, in defiant testimony from his hospital room Wednesday, insisted he wasn't ducking anyone. So anyway, in essence, federal officials at the CDC talked to him and advised him not to travel. They didn't forbid him from traveling, but that's because they weren't allowed to do that. And we'll get into this. This is something that they can do, okay, if the conditions are right. And now, with this whole thing before Congress, this is something they're probably going to be facilitating. It's very, very important that we understand this, okay? Now, he did travel 2 days earlier than he had planned to, presumably, so that way they couldn't ban him from doing it. But it just they're using this to highlight the loopholes in the system by which they can forbid people from traveling. Okay, it says, but U.S. doctors painted a picture of a man on the run from the start, revealing that Speaker left for his wedding and honeymoon 2 days earlier than planned, and saying they were blocked by Georgia law from stopping him and thus preventing what turned into an international health scare. Not so much, though. Really not really an international health scare, but it's been played up that way. Now, I find it interesting, this guy is a personal injury lawyer. You would think that a personal injury lawyer would be cognizant of the fact that he could be causing other people personal injury and could be sued, and he still could be. We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, the story goes on. Then when Speaker turned up in Rome, the government hesitated to ask Italian authorities to quarantine him in favor of offering him a second chance to cooperate. Instead, Speaker fled, slipping back across a U.S. border that was supposed to be closed to him when a border agent disregarded instructions and waved him through. Said Dr. Julie Gerberding, head of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, we gave the patient the benefit of the doubt, and in retrospect, we made a mistake, end quote. She highlighted several times, quote, we failed to take the aggressive actions we could have, end quote. Now, again, going back to the CDC SARS preparedness plan, they do talk about a voluntary quarantine, whereas they would tell you to stay home. Now, that can apply to, again, anything respiratory in nature, and it's just an agenda. It's not necessarily the law. Of course, it will probably become that way, and that's why it's important to pay attention to what it says. So eliminating the voluntary quarantine aspect of this means that they would just simply jump to stage two, which would be forcible quarantines of people in little quarantine zones, little camps. These camps would be patrolled by armed guards, and the people who are inside the quarantine zones would be electronically tracked and tagged. Now, that could be a microchip, that could be an ankle bracelet, that could be a card, any number of things. Very, very important. All right, so it goes on. If anything, Wednesday's dramatic sparring before Congress raised new questions about government authority to intervene before someone with an airborne infection takes steps that endangers others. Gerberding called for more authority for states to restrict such patients' movements. The head of the CDC is calling for more authority for the states to restrict the ability to travel. Now, the SARS preparedness plan also talks about interstate and intrastate checkpoints. Now, if you think the line is long because you need a passport to go out of this country to go to Canada, or go out of this country to go to Mexico, or go out of this country to go to the Caribbean, what's going to happen when you need some sort of ID card detailing that you're healthy that can be presumably updated and changed in real time, presumably with a microchip, when you're trying to go across state lines? Because the states will have the power to restrict your movement. So that's exactly what they're going to do, folks. Make no mistake. They'll say you must have the required vaccines in order to travel out of this state. Otherwise, it is our duty as a state of the union to restrict you from infecting people in other states. So when we talk about interstate and intrastate checkpoints, that's exactly what we're referring to. So if you're trying to – now, here in northwest Arkansas, I'm about 40 miles from the border of Oklahoma and about 40 miles from the border of Missouri. Now, I don't travel a whole lot, not long distances. I'd like to, but, you know, gas prices and all that jazz, it just isn't really feasible for me. But the point is that if I wanted to, I could. But now they can go ahead and find a reason to restrict me, saying, well, you don't have your vaccine, son. You ain't going anywhere. That's a big problem. Now, but because we are so close, and I'll give you an example. Oklahoma has a lottery, and Missouri has a lottery. I'm not a big gambler myself, but a lot of people are. And when the jackpots for these individual lotteries get up into the hundreds of millions of dollars, there's always groups of people getting together saying, everybody pitch in some money, and somebody will go and buy us all lottery tickets, and then we'll split the money or whatever the case may be. You know, office pools are and things like that. So this means that for a situation like that, the line to get across the state line is going to be a line, because there's going to be like, almost like a toll booth type of thing, some sort of checkpoint to make sure everybody traveling outside, even if they just go back and forth, is healthy enough to do that. Okay? Now, a national ID card with a microchip would fill that need. It would take care of that. It would address that concern. However, when the line gets really long, just like a toll booth, right? Everybody's out there and they're throwing their quarters in the bin, then you wait for it to count it, and then the little arm goes up and you're allowed to drive through. Well, they have the fast track thing. It's called an easy pass. It's a little thing that mounts on your windshield, and then basically you pay and you can just kind of fly right through. Very convenient, very easy, and a time saver, needless to say. So how much more likely is it them for them to be able to have people demand that for this thing to occur? If you could simply fly through the checkpoints relatively quickly, certainly a lot quicker when you have, let's say, like a subdermal microchip that they can read in your car. Maybe they can just go car to car with a little scanner or something. I don't know. I'm just saying that through the security, safety, and convenience, through those methods, they could facilitate anything. We've got people standing in line that are tripling around the building and going up and down various floors, going around the lobby several times just to get a passport. Okay, with biometric data. They have to find a way to integrate all of these things into one system. Now, the database for employment would fill, again, that need. It would address all of these different things. They could have all your biometric data and everything like that in this database. But you have to have something on your person to be able to match up to that database, and something with a chip in it would certainly streamline the process. And that's what people are demanding here. Now, in Washington State, they're already doing a little test run, a test market situation where the driver's licenses do have the microchips in them. And they're offering that for people to be able to travel across the border from Washington State into Canada if they do not want a passport. Passports are, you know what, $100? So let's say you get your driver's license for $30 with the microchip, you're saving $60. You can travel back and forth at your leisure. Now, you factor in gas prices as well, and long lines become more than an inconvenience. They become unaffordable. Okay? And this is the beginning of hurricane season. We saw a lot of evacuations in 2005 that didn't really work out too well. Anyway, I go on. Back to this story. It says, on May 10th, Fulton County, Georgia officials told Speaker he had a drug-resistant form of TB and that, quote, no, you should not travel, end quote, testified Health Department Chief Dr. Stephen Katowski. The question, quote, was he ordered not to travel? The answer to that is no. The local health department does not have the authority to prohibit or order someone not to travel, end quote. Speaker would have had to demonstrate he was a danger before the county could get a court order restricting his movement, said Katowski. But Speaker, age 31, told senators that in face-to-face meetings to discuss his treatment options, no doctors even wore masks. I was repeatedly told, he said, I was not contagious, but that I was not a threat to anyone, end quote. Not so, Katowski countered. His medical chart said he was told he was not, quote, highly contagious, end quote. So he wasn't contagious, but he wasn't highly contagious. And again, doctors weren't worried or anything like that. But this gives them the excuse to do these various things and facilitate some of the CDC's plans into law. Because the CDC itself, yeah, they have some degree of authority, but not in this, I'm so scared of terrorism that I'm going to pee my pants anytime anybody with dark skin and turban or whatever walks by me. The CDC has begun revamping its own leased aircraft to allow quarantine-style transport, said Gerberding. So again, that's interesting. Now, that's the version from the AP. The CNN version, a little more detail, perhaps. This one came out yesterday as well, CNN. The tuberculosis patient who set off an international health scare by flying to Europe, then Canada, before driving back to the U.S., told lawmakers Wednesday that doctors told him he was not contagious. Federal and local officials contended otherwise during testimony before a Senate Appropriations Committee. Speaker said, quote, I've cooperated with anything anyone has asked me to do. I look to the people who I believe I should trust to tell me whether or not I'm a threat to those around me. They told me I was not, end quote. A Fulton County, Georgia health official, however, insisted the speaker was told he was not highly contagious rather than not contagious at all. Dr. Stephen Katowski added that about 17% of TB cases are transmitted by people who are considered not highly contagious. Federal and local health officials said speaker took an international flight 2 days earlier than planned after he was told he had a drug-resistant form of TB and should not travel. CDC Director Julie Gerberding told the panel that the state law did not allow officials to prohibit Speaker from flying. In fact, she said, Speaker would have had to first show he was going to ignore the advice not to travel before the state would be empowered to do anything. Again, tying back into the SARS preparedness plan, voluntary quarantine doesn't work. Switch to a mandatory one. Okay? She said, quote, in Georgia, if a patient is to be isolated in an involuntary manner, it takes a court order and the patient must first demonstrate he is not compliant with medical advice, end quote. Katowski backed Gerberding's assertion and called the state law a, quote, unquote, catch-22 that prevents local health officials from acting proactively. Proactively. Excuse me. Proactively. Would that be like fighting wars preemptively and whatnot? Yes, it would. So, the doctor said, quote, I can't look at someone and say they might rob a bank. I have to wait until they do rob a bank, end quote. The question that has been asked over and over again, was Mr. Speaker prohibited from traveling? Was he ordered not to travel? The answer is no. The local health department does not have the authority to prohibit or order somebody not to travel, end quote. So what he's saying is that, hey, look, right now it would be great to preemptively stop someone from causing problems, you know, causing a health scare internationally. But we don't have that power yet. But they're calling for it. Speaker testified that he decided to leave the country after discussing his plans to get married in Greece with officials from the CDC and Fulton County Department of Health and Wellness, as well as his future father-in-law, excuse me, who is a CDC microbiologist involved in tuberculosis research. Fascinating connection and completely coincidental, end quote. It's my comments. CDC knew I had it, said Speaker. They were aware I was going on my travels. Yes, I was told that Fulton County would prefer that I not travel, but I was also told I was not contagious, I was not a threat to anyone, there was no need to sequester me, end quote. He said, had he been told he was contagious, quote, I wouldn't have been around my wife or my daughter and taken that risk that I could give this to them, end quote. It's a good point. If he wasn't too worried about his wife, why would he be too worried about everybody else? On Tuesday, Department of Homeland Security officials said the TB scare has spurred federal agencies to review their policies. Very interesting. Border Patrol officers will no longer have the discretion to ignore directives barring someone from entering the country, said the official, speaking on condition of anonymity. From now on, a supervisor must be involved in any such decision, said the official. The House Homeland Security Committee held a hearing Wednesday on what it called, quote, a poorly coordinated federal response to an incident with Homeland Security implications, end quote. Officials with DHS, the CDC, and the Customs and Border Protection testified. So again, a perfect dry run, a perfect trial, a perfect, any number of things you want to call this. That speaker was allowed to enter the country despite his illness has raised concerns about the government's ability to respond to an epidemic. DHS spokesman Russ Nock told the New York Times last week that his department ordered any border control agents who encounter speaker to, quote, isolate, detain, and contact public health service, end quote. The DHS official said Tuesday, quote, it is unclear to us why CDC officials did not disseminate a warning regarding speaker via the National Operations Center. The CDC instead reported its concern to Customs and Border Protection office in Atlanta. Had the CDC used the operation official, said the official, the operations center, said the official, the information would have been automatically shared with all relevant federal agencies, including the TSA. Speaker's placement on the no-fly list was delayed because of a discussion that lasted between 2 and 4 hours among DHS, CDC, and Justice Department officials trying to determine if DHS had the authority to put him on the no-fly list. The quandary arose because the no-fly list is meant to be a counterterrorism measure. So now they can basically say, hey, look, things need to change. We can put you on the no-fly list if you're a threat in any capacity, not simply just terrorism. According to the timeline, Speaker told the border agent he was crossing into the U.S. only for the day. An investigation is underway to determine whether he lied to the border agent. Who knows what that would consist of. He's since been undergoing a series of tests and has been placed on antibiotic therapy. On Tuesday, his attending physician, Dr. Charles Daly, said he's doing quite well and that a third and last sputum test had come back negative. The results mean Speaker is not very contagious, Daly said, but that does not mean zero. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back in 3 minutes with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Welcome back. Glad you're here, folks. You are listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whelan. Welcome. Tail end of hour number one already. This hour being brought to you by our good friends at the Howard Creek Resort, featuring 9 fully equipped individual housekeeping cabins and easy access to all the fun things in the area, including, of course, the peace, calm, and quiet of Bull Shoals Lake, Arkansas, and then, of course, the touristy nonsense of Branson, Missouri, all nearby. It's a perfect family vacation spot any time of the year there at Howard Creek Resort. So consider them, my friends, especially with 4th of July coming up. It's a perfect time to go and check out a historic fireworks show there. You can call them at 877-253-7690. You can also visit them online at www.howardcreek.com. Now, we've covered a lot of territory, and our guests will be joining us soon. I've got one more story, but before we do that, let's go to Jason in New York. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. I was just wondering what you thought of Ron Paul. I haven't listened in a couple weeks, so I'm sure you've been getting a lot or talked about it, but just wondering what your opinion was on him.
In what regard?
I mean, as a
person, as a candidate,
as a candidate.
Meaning, like, does he have a chance?
No, I mean, does he have your support? Do you think there's any hidden agenda behind him? Any hidden support?
It's hard support? To say. It's hard to say. I don't know the man. I've never spoken to the man. I know a lot of people who have and think incredibly highly of him. People I think highly of Ron Paul, and that says a lot in my mind. However, I don't know the guy. I understand, and a lot of people say, well, you know, he's not been straightforward enough with the truth. You know, he hasn't come right out, and he's said that our foreign policy is what causes us to get attacked and so on and so forth, but he hasn't really gone into September 11th itself. I think that would be a death knell for him at this point to bring these things up. So I don't hold him accountable for that at all. I think it's going to be extraordinarily difficult for him to get past the other big profile candidates in the Republican Party who are already there, including, of course, Giuliani, McCain, and then, of course, you got Brownback, who's Opus Dei. You've got Tommy Thompson, who's a Mason. You've got Mitt Romney, who's, you know, got some notoriety himself. Then, of course, there's still possibility of Fred Thompson coming in, who's obviously got a lot of notoriety, as well as Newt Gingrich, who's still considering throwing his hat in the ring. And then even if he gets past all those and becomes the Republican candidate, he's still got to beat the Democrat, which, again, could be anybody. Hillary and Edwards and Obama still strong, and then the possibility continues to exist for Al Gore to throw his hat in the ring, and then to take it down to the independent candidates, which Ron Paul said he would not run as an independent. Bloomberg is considering, and there are rumors out there that Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, might throw his hat in the ring as an independent candidate. So that's a lot of more higher-profile people who could detract from attention that Ron Paul should get. So as far as a person, as a candidate, I think he's better than all the rest. But, you know, I don't know him personally, and I don't know too much about all of his feelings on the detailed stuff. I'd vote for him, given the opportunity.
Well, I mean, I'm always kind of suspicious when I see, you know, the turn of events in the last, you know, month or so. I mean, it seems like the so-called truth movement and all these people have really latched onto him, and, you know, they have the big debates going on. Or, oh, is he trying to be censored? I mean, I don't really believe in that. I believe that Fox, if they didn't want him to debate, he wouldn't be on the, you know, he wouldn't be in the debates. Look what happened with the Green Party a few years ago, where guys were arrested for just showing up to sit in the audience.
Jason, we have to go to break here, my friend. Hang on a second. Folks, back in 90 seconds with hour number two.